Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
All right, everybody. Today is going to be the first installment of my Women in Dentistry podcast series. And I think it's, unfortunately, I don't think it's been covered by any of the mainstream dental podcasts. But what we know is that north of 50% of graduating dentists are female, but yet it's to a certain degree a male-dominated world. But we're seeing that change dramatically. As a speaker who's been on the speaking circuit, so I say 10, 15 years now, I've seen a dramatic shift where it was mainly consultants that were in the speaking circuit. And now we're starting to see a significant number of women clinicians and everything. And so the next 5 or 10 episodes, I really want to kind of focus on everyday women practitioner owners and associates that you should know and what they can bring to us. So my first guest is someone who I met for the first time last summer in Orlando at an event. It's Dr. Mona Patel, who is the typical Indian. They're all Patels. So that means someone in her family or her husband's family owns a motel. I'm pretty sure of it. But Mona is fantastic. So Mona, what's up? What are you doing?
Hi, thanks for having me, T-Bone. Or I should call you T-Bone Uncle because...
No, T-Bone Uncle. I'm not that old. I'm only seven years older than you.
A little older, so...
I'm only 6 years older, not that much older. So, all right, Mona, let's dive in, all right? Where are you at? I mean, what are you doing at your office so late?
As you can see, I'm in my office right now, and it's 7:45 at
it's
night.
It's 8:41 Eastern time.
8:41 Eastern time. And the reason being, because this is, a webcam and, that viral video that went out of the
but that got that guy a lot of attention. You would love that attention, right?
That's my life. So if we did this at home, you'd probably have a lot of little intruders coming in and interrupting and asking me questions.
Perfect. That'd be awesome. I would love that. My kids are dying. My kids want to get on the podcast, and for some reason, I haven't done it with them yet. And
they should. Well, they're so unpredictable, but it's hilarious. So I said, you know what? My first podcast with you, I'll play it safe and stay at the office. But maybe next time, I'll have the little ones come in.
And where is your office?
So my office is in a little suburb north of Milwaukee, about 5 miles north. It's called Whitefish Bay. So, Milwaukee is a growing population, but there's a lot of great small suburban communities surrounding it. So we're in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin.
And do you live there as well?
Not quite yet. Eventually, we will be kind of relocating to this area, but we're in downtown Milwaukee right now. Still living the urban life down there. And
urban lifestyle with two kids, with an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old?
You've got it. Two girls, 8-year-old and 5-year-old, Simran and Sienna, who are the loves of our life, but they kind of dictate my whole world. So
listen, that is total BS, by the way, that the loves of your life. You don't have to pretend on our show, okay?
But isn't that what every parent is supposed to say?
No, but I don't. What I tell you is they are going to be the death of me. I'm pretty certain my kids will be the death of me.
That's for sure. I'll agree to that. I at least once a day text my husband, hashtag mom of the year, because I've done something wrong or made a mistake or forgotten something and, you know, or screamed at a child. So it is, it's all part of all the parenting package. So no, they go to school in this area and we're downtown on the east side. But I call Whitefish Bay Pleasantville, USA, because it is, it's like that small town USA feel. Mm. And just, yeah, it was a great,
lots of soccer moms.
A lot of soccer moms, a lot of lacrosse moms up here.
Hockey moms, probably. Hockey
moms, you got everything. And it's literally on my block, there's a bread shop, there's a yoga studio, there's a cute little hair salon. I mean, it's like going to Disney World and you go to that small town USA. That's what our street is.
But you know, all those people are crazy there in small town USA. They're all hiding something.
Yeah, but they all are hiding something, maybe in the witness protection, who knows? But
maybe you're in the witness protection.
We get free bread and cookies, so I'm not complaining.
All right, so let me ask you some questions. Oh, by the way, one last thing. So you have an 8-year-old daughter, Simran, a 5-year-old daughter, Sianna, and you're married to a physician as well, a Parag. So he is an interventional radiologist?
Correct, yeah. He is interventional radiologist, and his focus in his career is peripheral vascular disease. So he does things like aortic aneurysm repair.
You've already lost me.
Exactly. But aren't you proud of me? It's pretty well rehearsed that I actually know what he does. Because
so that's because you're a 1960s Indian woman.
Exactly. I'm a good Indian wife. I know I can repeat.
So does he give you a hard time that he's the real doctor and you're not?
Oh, God. Do you know how many jokes in my family there are that, you know, what do you call somebody who doesn't get into med school? A dentist?
No, I call them smart. You know, it's interesting. So when I married my wife is also named Mona. When I met her, you know, the typical Indian thing, you go meet the parents, they ask you what you do. And I said, I'm a dentist. And they looked at me like I was stupid. And I said, here's the difference. I will make the same amount of money as you will. And I will work 4 days a week and I will work from 8 to 5 and that'll be it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And they looked at me like I was crazy. And then, you know, they say, maybe you're lazy. I said, no, I'm just smart.
But you know what? And the reality is healthcare is not what it is today as it was in our parents' generation.
No, not in the 80s. Listen, they were minting money in the 80s, you know, calling the shots, doing what they wanted.
Exactly. I mean, my father's a physician and then, you know, a lot of siblings, a lot of my family is. So we talk about this all the time. And my sister and I are the two dentists in the family. And
who, is she older than you?
She's older than me. Her name is Mina Goyal. She practices in Chicago. So she's got two offices in Chicago.
Did she start practicing before you?
Yes, she did. She's old like you.
Is that the reason you went into dentistry?
Yeah, it's a huge reason why I went into.
How much older is she than you?
She's 6 years older than me.
Okay, so when you got out of high school, she was already in dental school.
Exactly. And kind of saying, you know, we were always kind of primed to pick a career or field that was service oriented. And usually for Indian immigrant parents, it's usually going into medicine.
Of course. Engineer, medicine, pharmacy, maybe.
Exactly.
It's such a good profession for women.
Exactly. Yeah. You got it. For women, medicine was not the great profession.
No.
My dad steered me and my sister away from it. He said, you know, think about what you want in life. And if you want a family and you want to not be doing 10 years of residency and then be 30 before you get married, which is, you know, every Indian parent's worst nightmare to have a 30-year-old single daughter. So
my parents have a 33-year-old single son. So
there you go. They're probably sweating. So.
No, you know, well, they made me ask him a tough question one day. And and I said, listen, you know, it's a different day and age. And my, you know, parents are so weird. My mom's like, I hope I get to see him get married before I die. I'm like, why is everything the death, right?
Man, they have one dentist son and one single son. They probably just can't face society right now.
I know. And my brother is an oral surgeon. So
he's got the redeeming quality.
Yeah, exactly. He does.
I mean, medicine, we were kind of exposed to dentistry because my dad was kind of the visionary. He's like, give it, you know, it's a great healthcare field. Any service oriented career is noble. And then you do some, you learn a skill and you use it for some good. So that was kind of our mentality growing up and kind of seeing my sister Mina go through dental school and just be fulfilled. And it was creative and it seemed like a good career. I'm like, yeah, it looks good. I'm going to look into it. And I just, you know, how do you know it is as a 20-year-old, what really your life is going to be like as a dentist, right? You don't know. You shadow some people.
But that's part of the beauty of dentistry is that you can be anything you want it to be. You know, my dad told me that dentistry, my dad, I don't want to ever use the word force because he never did. But the more I look back, he was like, he sent me to dental school without telling me that's what he thinks I should do. And he always said, listen, I've never met a broke dentist. I've never met an unemployed dentist. And he said, dentistry can be your gateway into anything you want to do. If you want to be a business person, dentistry will provide you capital. You know, you want to be a business person in dentistry, you can own multiple offices. If you want to be a, you know, a family man and really have a lifestyle, you can work 3, 4, 5 days a week in dentistry and have a great family life too. So he always pushed me towards dentistry.
Exactly. And at some, it's like our parents, they just know. They have this insight and they knew. And me and my sister, we got very lucky. You know, my brother, he became a physician and we tease him all the time.
Is like, he older than both of you?
He's the baby. No, he's okay. The younger one. And we talk, it's like, it's just not, medicine's not the same anymore. And we have so much control in dentistry. One of them being like, you know, I just built a brand new office and it is everything from paint to furniture to philosophy we get to control. But my husband, he's, you know, works in a hospital environment and he's like, I'll never get to kind of...
Oh, it smells like Clorox in there.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I'll never in my place of work or where I've established my career in teaching that he'll be able to design an aesthetic that reflects his personality. So
somewhere he loves going and doesn't mind hanging out till at 8 o'clock at night, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And so you're at the mercy of, you know, hospital systems are so corporate. And so there's so much unpredictability there, but I think it's nice to know in dentistry that there's still a lot of control that we have as dentists, as clinicians, especially if you own your own practice. And that's, it's a great feeling. Again, at 20, I didn't know, you don't think about this. You just think, I'll be a dentist. I'll, you know, get to wear a white coat and practice.
And do you wear a white coat even?
I do.
I don't. I wear jeans to work.
You wear, you wear jeans and your polo. I hope you don't wear that orange hat to work because I've been seeing it.
No. That orange hat is number one, okay? First and foremost, I think it's beautiful, okay? And number two, my mom handmade that for me, okay?
That's the only reason you're allowed to wear it is if you had somebody you love make it for you. Because yeah. I was looking at it and like, okay, he's either being sponsored by like Orange Theory or somebody. Like, something's going on.
I couldn't be that lucky to have any sponsors. Nobody's willing to sponsor me. I can't even get my wife to sponsor me, for God's sakes. And speaking of sponsors, listen to this. One of my team members I just hired probably 2 months ago is a Canadian. And I didn't realize she was here on a student visa and she's just getting deported.
Oh, no. Well, you better. You know what? She might be lucky. We might all be moving to Canada one day.
I am not. Listen, let me tell you, regardless of political inclination, I still think this is the greatest country in the world with the greatest opportunity in the world. And what makes this country great is how resilient you are. Because we've had some bozos in office and in politics. And look how great our country still is. We do well despite our government.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, and you and I are similar in that, we're immigrant children. We're first generation Indians. Our parents came here.
So I was born in India, just so you know.
So was I.
Okay. How old were you when you moved here?
I was a baby, though. I was 6 months old.
I was 2 years. So I lived in India much longer than you. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm I am still an Indian citizen.
Oh, well, that I'm not. So
You're smart. You should see the lines I have to go through to get back into this country. It's unbelievable.
Well, yeah, but it's worth it. It's still a place where you can build the American dream. And, you know, I know that your father built the hotels and made his
motels,
way up.
Cockroach motels.
Cockroach motels, but then you can't work your way up. Yeah. And I think it's a great place. I was recently at IDS in Germany. And it was my first time going to an international dental conference, and it was overwhelming. It's amazing.
It's different, isn't it?
Oh, it's different and it's huge. It's like 10 times the size of Midwinter Meeting. So it was just an eye opener as to how small the American dental market is. But I just got the feeling, though, that a lot of their advancements and their teachings and like kind of the things that they're showing is targeted towards American dentists.
Yeah, well, our market drives the economy of dental companies.
It really does. I mean, there's 25 different ovens for glazing, a stain and glazing, you know, that even though we're really kind of the only in the American market, we kind of only see a few options. But when you're there, there's so many varieties out there that we don't get to see. But yet the U.S. dentist opinion and kind of what our take on these products is what drives their sales.
Well, our buying patterns, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so it was just crazy to see that. But I got to see there, and I talked to a lot of German dentists that practice there in Cologne, and they have a lot of struggles there. I mean, they build these beautiful offices and very modern, very sleek. They put a lot of time and effort and thought into smart design, and they'll do that. But the way that their practices are government regulated, one dentist was telling me they build $90 for a root canal. $90 US is the equivalent for their root canal.
In Germany,
it's all fixed. It's all regulated. So it's like it's not a very capitalistic mentality, and every German dentist bills the same and collects the same there, and so it's weird. It's a dichotomy to see kind of how we do that here in the U.S. And you can see five different dental offices on one block, and they have very different philosophies and fee schedules and design aesthetics and things like that. But that's not so much in Europe. I mean, it's very regulated there. So I still think America is the best place to be a small business entrepreneur dentist who wants to have it all.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
You know, what's interesting about IDS is it's a total show. There's not an ounce of education there.
There's no CE there. I didn't learn anything, but I definitely saw a lot. Well, one thing I did learn was that there's a bar in every booth.
IDS is the biggest show in dentistry. But you know, interesting, right after IDS, I didn't go to IDS. I needed a weekend off, but I went to take a CEREC anterior course from Joseph Kunkela in the Czech Republic. So it was eye-opening for me to see how education is very different in Europe and how we had a very international crowd as part of our class. I mean, it was a small group, but it was interesting. Like, I met a couple of dentists from Peru and Croatia, and they were telling me that dentists, you know, we talk about, hey, which associate should I take right out of school? And these guys are like, okay, I want to work in this place. I'll be an assistant there until a dentist job opens up. It's interesting how little, by our standards, the dentists make there, how little the fees are. But yet, I see some of the work they do, and it's, oh my God, it's a very different mentality in terms of the dentistry that they're doing. And they you know, they really view American dentistry as a greed driven business, which quite frankly it is. And that I'm okay with that.
No. And I 100% agree there. You know, the dentists, they go to work, they kind of clock in, clock out. they're there. It's like I said, it's all government regulated. So they're okay with capping out their income. And it's not very capitalistic at all. But I do think that they do admire the American dentist for kind of our creativity and our, and I mean, I know the industries in Europe at IDS, at least, were really like the American dentist because we buy everything. So they love that mentality. But so, it was an eye-opening experience to be out there at IDS and kind of see how other countries and other international dentists, what their struggles are and what they are good at, and kind of comparing it to what we face here in the U.S. I still think, though, I would build an office here in the U.S. again, over and over again.
What would you tell your daughters about dentistry when they get up that age?
Well, my 5-year-old's already told me she's offering to buy my practice, my new beautiful practice, for $3.
Indian mentality would be that you would give your practice to your kids, okay?
Yep. And I go, okay, for $3, I told Parag, I need a plan B for retirement. It's definitely not the sale of this practice. But no, I mean, I would tell them that, I know in 20, 25, 30 years, dentistry is going to evolve even more, but I'm optimistic. I think it's going to evolve for the better. And there'll be more of a fusion of more technology integrated into our practice. And I think I would tell them it's a great field. I'm fulfilled. I walk into my office every day with a smile on my face, and I leave every day with a smile on my face. And, you know,
you know that's a lie. There's no way you leave every day with a smile in your face.
I honestly do. Maybe because I'm living in my dream.
What psychiatric drugs are you taking?
We leave the nitrous tanks on high in my office. Maybe that contributes to it. But you know what I mean, metaphorically, in that I love doing what we get to do. And we all know after 10 years of doing this, some parts of dentistry get boring or you're not stimulated, you're not challenged, and it's definitely taxing on you physically. So there are parts of it that aren't great, but in general, I think it's a great field, especially for women.
All right, so let's talk about 10 years. So you graduated dental school in 2007. Yep. Where'd you graduate dental school from? Vietnam?
Yeah, Vietnam. I got it online, $39. And yeah.
Oh, you're as a top dental graduate award. Buy our plaque and we'll send this to you.
You got it. No,
in all seriousness, where'd you graduate dental school?
I graduated from University of Illinois in Chicago.
So okay, UIC.
UIC. And it was a great program because it was at the time, the only dental school in the Chicago area. So we got to see a lot and do a lot of rotations. And so graduated there and then went to Miami for an AEGD for 1 year.
Where at Miami?
It was affiliated with Jackson Memorial Hospital. It was a small AEGD clinic called Community Smiles. Okay. And it was great. So they treated the indigent population in Miami. We would have, you know, a line out the door at 7 a.m. and our residency program would start every morning.
It was a denture clinic.
Yeah. denture was only 1 day. Then we had ortho 1 day a month, endo a couple days a month, implants. I placed like probably a dozen implants in my AEGD that year. So all the volunteer dentists in the area would come in and teach us, and we would treat the population there, and they'd just be waiting all day to get in. And we would have designated days every month for different aspects of general dentistry. So
why'd you do a residency?
You know, it was in hindsight, I'm glad I did it. I wish I could say that I was really eager to continue my education. For me, it was more of a practical, logistical situation. Parag, my husband, was doing.
Were you already married when you got out of dental school?
I was already married when I got out of dental school, and he matched in Miami at the Cardiac and Vascular Institute for his fellowship year. So I didn't want to take the Florida boards and just to practice for 1 year. So I said, you know what, I'm going to take this year. We didn't have kids yet. I knew he was going to be working 20 hours a day. So I was like, I'm going to take this year to do an AEGD. And it was an unpaid residency, but it was the best decision I ever did because I really sharpened up those clinical skills. But at the time, it was just
But when you say sharpened up, okay, do you really mean that?
Yeah.
Like, retrospectively, do you think that made you a better clinician? Or they... The things you do today were as a direct result of that GPA.
Because I'm hiring a new associate this summer and he's a fresh graduate. And it's like talking to him kind of brought back all my memories. When you graduate dental school, the day of graduation, you are probably the smartest you'll ever be, but you don't know a damn thing yet. You know,
I think you're you're dumb.
Yeah. Well, I know. I'm saying you're clear.
Not you, but graduates.
You're incredibly book smart. You know, tripod occlusion like none other, but you don't know anything yet. And so I could have started working and I would have learned, I think any first year out, whether it's corporate office, your own office, an associate, you know, a residency, your first year out is another training year, no matter what environment you're put in. So for me, I did 20 ortho cases that year. I can't even count how many endos. It just was like one after another, after another. And you had great teachers teaching you. So yes, absolutely. That really made me feel comfortable about my clinical skills. So when I took my first job, I wasn't nervous trying to diagnose, you know, root pathology. Whereas when it's your first job out or right out of dental school, you're going to second guess that.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch Implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3d-dentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
All right, so what did you do after you, 2008, you did your, you finished your AGD in Miami, South Beach, on the beach, in your high-rise luxury condo from your unpaid residency?
Let me tell you how high-rise that was. we're down there for 1 year, and then it was time to, you know, have a grown-up life and get some real jobs. So we settled in Milwaukee. You know,
your husband choose, you choose?
He was a driving force because we're from Chicago, from the Chicago area, and so we were kind of looking back to settle in the Midwest.
Is that pretty common for... So this is where I'm very afraid that I'm going to become sexist and get in trouble, okay? And so I'm asking some of these questions is it not unusual for the, as a women dentist, to be told where to go based on your husband as primary?
Well, you know, it depends on where you are in your life, okay? Okay, it doesn't need to be Indian or American or what. I think when in our generation, this day and age, I mean, he was finishing a fellowship year, and his field is very, it was a very niche field, and he was looking at a program directorship position at a huge academic hospital. That kind of narrowed the field.
So, I mean, there's like 5 or 10 places in the country, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's 5 or 10 places that would kind of fulfill that. And I mean, I set the parameters. I'm the one who said, I want to be in the Midwest. I want to have a family. I want to be close to our family. So yeah, I mean, I think if we're playing like kind of gender norms, maybe, I think women maybe can dictate parameters of being where, if you want to start a family. But I think oftentimes, the primary bread earner, quote unquote, or the...
Yeah, but I don't think that's the situation in your case necessarily, okay?
Not necessarily, but you know what? I wasn't this business owner, you know, private practice owner 10 years ago. I was just finished my degree and we were starting our family right then. So my primary goal, my primary focus was, hey, regardless of whatever job I'm going to take, it's going to be secondary to me having my first child right now.
And so you knew that you wanted to do a job.
Yes. So I knew, I said the first few years, he's establishing it. I wanted to be incredibly supportive. And so I was like, okay, Milwaukee sounds great. Let's settle there. It's only an hour from all of our family in Chicago. And, you know, there's a lot less traffic. So I was all up for it. And we said, we'll give it 5 years. And, you know, maybe every relationship is different, but it's really important to me. I think to have your partner or your spouse be incredibly professionally fulfilled, it just makes them happier people.
Well, it makes you happier at life and at home.
life and happier people tend to empty the dishwasher more often and throw out the garbage.
Wait, is that why I don't empty the...
After you help out at home more. So I was like, let's make sure he's very professionally fulfilled so he is happier at home.
Oh, God. My poor Mona.
No, your poor Mona. Oh, goodness. I don't even want to know. But no, we it was a mutual decision, but I kind of set the parameters. And so we moved here to Milwaukee due to his career driving force, but I was fine with it because it was an hour away. But also maybe it was a little... And my situation was different. I moved here pregnant with our first child. So my mindset wasn't, I want to build my dream practice right now, or I want to start placing implants.
Was that even in your mind then?
Yes, it was. It was in my mind, maybe one day. It was a maybe one day.
But so it wasn't like a definitive, yes, I'm going to do this.
No, I always thought I was content. Honestly, to be honest, seven years ago, I was content being a dentist because I thought I could, you know, have a career and make a difference, but I wanted to be a mom.
What are you, millennial? You want to make a difference?
Exactly. Make a difference and get paid for it while you're making that difference.
Yeah. And do the good dentistry while the owner doctor does the restorative dentistry.
Exactly. I thought I'd come in and do these huge cases and then, you know, still be at ballet by 3 o'clock for my daughter. So, I never valued the importance of wanting to buy my own practice. Back then, I just wanted to be a dentist. And so I did. I joined a corporate environment.
Okay. And define corporate environment for me, from your eyes.
Corporate environment is where it's not, single or two or three partner owned. They have multiple offices. This office, you know, Forward Dental had over 30 offices. And okay. you get hired.
Was the owner on site for you?
No, they're the owner. No, it was not owner on site. It was like a shareholder.
Okay. So it's true corporate dentistry. True
corporate. It's, you know, it falls into the Aspen Dental categories or Midwest Dental, Heartland, those types. So true corporate dentistry where there's, you know, you have a management aspect to them and then the owners are shareholders. And so you're strictly an employee of this group. And you have no say in any of the policy making or the running of the practice, but you go in and you basically see your patients and leave.
Okay. And how long were you there at Forward Dental?
I was there 5 years.
5 years. Yeah, you're like a dream associate for five years.
Yeah, I was the dream associate because I was there 5 years because in those 5 years I had two children. And so every other year I was.
Well, how much were you working?
So I was working, I started out full time 5 days a week. And then after the first maternity leave, went back to 4 days. And after the second maternity leave, went back to 3 days.
And they were cool with it.
They were cool with it. They were, you know what, I think sometimes corporate dentistry gets a bad rap, but there are a lot of benefits to it.
I think they feed on that, to be quite honest with you.
Maybe
can I ask you this then? So would you say that maybe you didn't look for private practice associateships because of that reason?
Because of what reason?
That, hey, I I'm going to have a kid. I might go to 5 days, 4 days, 3 days.
Yeah, I wanted the flexibility. I was no way that I wanted to invest in a private practice with two little kids at home.
No, but I'm saying even work for someone like me, not me personally, yeah. but like yeah. a private practice owner and be yeah. an associate in a true private practice.
I 100% went into corporate dentistry because I didn't want to screw over an owner because I knew I would be on maternity leave and I wanted to work part-time and things like that. So I thought, you know, at least for a few years until we settle and I figure out what I really want to do with my career, let me work in a corporate environment where if I'm coming and going a little bit throughout a year, it's not going to affect the practice as much.
You know, I equate that to my mom's job as a teacher. So my mom she had a master's in psychology in India and came back here. And I think, I want to say, was it ninth grade or 10th grade? When I was in ninth grade or 10th grade, my mom went back to college to get her teacher certificate. And she got I want to say it was like eighth and ninth grade. And so my mom went back and she commuted 45 minutes each way every day. To go to college to get a teaching certificate. And, you know, to a certain degree, I said, why are you doing this? She goes, well, you know, I want to have flexibility. Teaching's a good job. At the end of the day, you know, it's eight to three, whatever it is. And, you know, I have the flexibility. I have to work. I don't have to work. It's, you know, that kind of thing. So how much did your husband's job or his being a professional himself play into your decision making on what you did out of dental school?
a huge part. And I think, you know, I mean, where I'm as progressive female as you get, but there's still, I made the decision to be a wife and to be a mom. And for me, those are incredibly wholesome roles that I wanted to play. And so
when do I get one of those?
Yeah. You have a Mona already. But I wanted to be able to, you know, keep a fun, happy home. And I wanted to be there for my children as much as I could. And I think in this day and age, it's so hard for women to get away with saying that without being tagged as not career driven then. And it's such a fine balance because I think stay at home moms are sometimes looked upon as like they're not as driven.
I'm jealous. Are you kidding me?
Far from the truth.
But they work hard, by the way.
When I was a stay-at-home mom, it's harder than being at work because it's a thankless job. And
it is.
And there's so much going on and you don't get the acknowledgement for it because I think too oftentimes it's like what do you bring into the household dictates kind of how much appreciation you get. So, supporting my husband and the first 5-6 years of his career in establishing the new, the IR residency program or getting that going at his hospital, that was incredibly time consuming for him. Even if he wasn't on call, he was in the hospital on most weekends. And, you know, he went from working 60, 70, 80 hours a week the first 5 years that we had moved to Milwaukee. And I was incredibly supportive. Yes, it takes its toll. It takes a toll on a marriage and it takes its toll on me feeling like, okay, now there was a point a few years in where I was like, okay, I want to do more.
It's my turn.
And so that's kind of where the pendulum shifted about 5 years in, 4 years in, where I had two kids and I was with them for the first few years. And by saying with them, I've always worked, but working 3 days corporate dentistry is a lot more flexible than.
Oh, I mean, to a certain degree, you punch in, you punch out, you don't have business, you don't have to work on your practice. It's literally a job.
I worked 28 hours a week and I literally work 28 hours a week. Right now, my clinical practice is 2 hours a week. I work 24/7.
It seems like it. All right. So let's back to this thing. Okay. So while you're in corporate dentistry, which I think is a terrible name, but that's irrelevant. Okay. Because we all are like my practice is corporate dentistry because I'm a corporation too, but as are you.
Big box dentistry.
Yeah, so that's fair. So let me ask you this. How driven were you in this first 5 years? Were you taking a lot of CE? Were you learning a lot of stuff? Or were you just doing whatever your practice needed, where you were working needed?
Well, at the time I thought I was pretty driven because I was like, oh, I'm going to the CE, I'm doing this. But again, when you're an employee in a large group practice, you can't dictate certain things. I didn't even take any CEREC or CAD-CAM classes because we couldn't implement it into our practice. The general dentist can't place the implants in that group. So that's why I kind of let that fizzle away. I came off on such a high from my residency placing implants, and then I didn't touch it for 5 years. So I driven at the time to do CE and do, but it was very restorative dentistry driven, the bread and butter of dentistry.
Like, so give me some examples of the types of CE you were taking then. And do you look back and say, I should have taken different and more CEs?
No. I think those are building blocks to, when you're few years more comfortable into clinical practice. So, the first couple of years are how to adequately diagnose endoperio lesions or.
They have classes like that?
Yeah, they do. They have classes.
I skipped all of those.
Well, we're mastering anterior aesthetics. And this is not, full anterior restoration. This is like mastering your anterior resins.
Like a class 3 that you can't see.
Yeah. Or, managing pediatric patients.
Oh, God, help me.
So, but at the time I thought, I'm learning. And it's all things you needed to know, but they were very baseline foundational skills, which there's nothing wrong in doing that. No, I didn't know any better. Absolutely not. I didn't know any better. And I was sheltered from a lot that's out there.
That was because of your job to a certain degree?
Yeah, I think it was because of the job. And also because I don't think I was as aggressive in going out there to learn or see. And even though my sister was in private practice, I mean, I talked to her every day. She would be telling me things that she's doing or implementing or, she was going out to Scottsdale for spears 3-4 times a year and telling me all that. And I would say, yeah, okay. Because my priorities were different. And they were more focused, very focused on being at home. And I was more focused on, you know, getting home to an 18-month-old. And I didn't travel as much and things like that. But that was my conscious decision. But then it's amazing. It just, there's no aha moment that it just, I woke up and I said, this is not for me anymore. But you kind of start feeling bored and you start feeling unfulfilled. And then that's what kind of drove then the decision to pursue my own small private practice.
This would be like 2013 then.
This is 2013 when okay. I, you know, placed my last amalgam before I just
amalgams.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like you have to follow what the, you know, because for dental, at least insurance covers amalgams and there's an upcharge for resin. So majority of the patient population, they're paying for the amalgams. And so I had to do it, even though I hated it. And you just come home. I came home one day. I'm like, okay, I'm done. I don't want to. Well, I can't. I know I don't want to do this, but I'm practicing. I'm doing something that I don't believe in and I have to do it. And I'm doing it what, for a paycheck? So I said, this is not right. And so I learned a lot from that. You know, I don't want to bash them. I did learn a lot, but I wasn't building any real long lasting patient relationships.
You only learned what you thought you were. You learned your ceiling was very low.
Exactly. My ceiling was low. My priorities were different, but my professional fulfillment was so low. It wasn't a priority, but then you start evolving a little bit. And so I had, you know, very candid, long couple months conversations with Parag. I was like, okay, time.
No man wants to talk for a couple of months.
He poor guy. I like nag him to death. He calls his Bose noise canceling headphones. He calls us Mona canceling headphones.
Wait. Mona, I'm writing this down for my Mona. Mona canceling headphones.
Oh, he puts them on and turns on the switch and he's like, can't hear you.
So, yeah. I gotta meet this character.
If you don't know this about me by now, I like to talk everything out. So yeah. Poor guy. But we had a very open conversation. I told him, listen, we've been together what, 10 years? I need to be professionally fulfilled, you know, and your career is incredibly demanding. But I'm very lucky. I mean, he was incredibly supportive, and I was like, okay, well, let's do it. You tell me what I need to cut back on, and whatever, let's make this work. And but so,
however supportive he is, okay, and I'm supportive to my wife to a certain degree as well. But incredibly driven men, we're selfish in that at the end of the day, it's really about us.
Well, you know, but incredibly intelligent wives know that at the end of the day, you keep letting them think it's about them, but really you're getting your way.
So is that what's happening to me?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I learned early on. I mean, he still, you know, thinks he's runs the family show, but you know, the reality. Oh,
I don't run the family show. I run nothing. I run the business show. I run my practice and I run her practice pretty much. And that's pretty much it. And even that, I'm not even involved in her practice as much. They've kicked me out of that too.
But you know what? But I mean, what husband is not going to say, yeah, sure. You want to go buy a practice. You're going to, I mean, yeah, it's going to take a lot of work and you'll be away from the family a little bit, but it's one, again, he recognized it too. He's like, you'll be happier because you're doing something that you love. And at the end, it's going to be a better financial reward for the family. So I think he saw it as a win-win, but I mean, of
course, there's the Indian in him. That's the Patel in him.
There's a Patel in him. Yeah. You know, and I was like, okay, well, something's got to give because you can't be, you know, have everything in place and juggle everything well all the time. So, but you know, that those are superficial things. Like, yeah, he, poor guy, probably eats yogurt and granola more often for dinner than I like to admit to my mom, but it's the reality of it.
Betty, you must take care of him.
Exactly.
Bichara.
doesn't get fed. I'm like, your son is just fine.
So, all right. So 2013, you decide to leave your job and you're going to start private practice. Did you buy something? Did you go from scratch? Yeah. What'd you do?
So to make it a long story very short, I, you know, looked around quite a bit. But I thought I wanted kind of shared ownership, but an opportunity for a complete 100% buyout was in play. And it was in Whitefish Bay. It was a great practice, been around for 30 plus years. Outdated old, you know, building, renting in an old building and an older practice. But, you know, it had a great patient population. And so it was kind of ideal for me. It was small. It was cute. It wasn't overwhelming. And it was he wanted to do a 100% ownership transfer, but wanted to stay on for a couple of years.
Even better.
And so that for me was like, that is a complete win-win because I don't have to share ownership. I can own it right out, but I have him around to help transition me into some things.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, how much was the practice doing and how much did you buy it for?
So the practice, he, Bill Tiburon, it was his private practice for 30 years. The last 2-3 years average of what I was looking at when I was doing my valuation, he was doing about clearing like right at $1 million.
Okay. So right? he was collecting about $1 million. So you, probably bought it for $600-700?
Yeah, pretty close. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. Right under seven.
Okay.
So, and this is based on a really good friend of mine. His name is Andy Lumcool with Edge Advisors. He is a dental broker per se, but he did the full valuations and, you know, all the numbers. You have to have your attorney and your accountant and everything look at it, but it all lined up. And so we financed it and I bought the practice and, you know, November 30th, he owned it. December 1st, I owned it. And it was simple as that. And, you know, I inherited the staff and that was
the team. Staff is an infection.
I inherited the team and
they may not have been a team, but they are a team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They definitely run my life here. they kind of inherited them. And I think everyone was a little nervous because he was, you know,
how big was this office?
Physically.
Yeah. Physically.
Oh, like 1600 square feet.
How many operatories do they have?
Three dental ops, two hygiene ops.
Five ops in that small of a space?
Yeah, it was like about 1600 square feet, and it wasn't big.
So how'd you guys share both of you then?
Well, we alternated. We went there we overlapped a lot. It didn't overlap a lot, I'm sorry. And he was only there about a day and a half a week.
Okay.
And so we weren't there together very much, and the front office team was amazing at scheduling kind of the diehard patients.
For him.
Him. Scheduling him when we were both there so that I could do the hygiene check and he introduced me. And I give him credit because what kind of his philosophy and what he's telling all of his patients is, hey, listen, I'm retiring soon. Not now, soon. And I'm not gonna be around here forever, but I've picked your next dentist for you. You don't have to do that job. I've picked her for you and she's here and she's awesome. So it really helped to have that endorsement.
Of course.
This is a very Whitefish Bay is just a very affluent community, a very big Jewish population, and you know Bill Tiburon.
What does affluent and Jewish have to do with this?
I'm talking about
this. Don't go there. Don't go there. Let's move. Just glaze right over it. Okay.
Just saying, he's Bill Tiburon. He is a an older Jewish gentleman, and his patients really connected with him because a lot of them through his religious affiliations and things like that. And then
the JCC.
Yeah, the JCC. And then here comes me, you know, the Indian lady who was, you know, this bubbly Indian lady that comes in. And I was like, takes them a little bit to kind of trust in me that I know what I'm talking about sometimes. So
was it daunting to own this practice?
Yes, absolutely. It was, I knew I had a lot ahead of me, but I didn't realize how much brain power it really takes.
And your husband being a physician, did he help or was it helpful in any way? Did he have any, it sounds like he's not in a private practice environment or a business ownership environment. So he can't really necessarily bring any of that to the table.
No, I mean, he doesn't look at P&L sheets every month with an accountant. He doesn't have to worry about overhead and things like that. He did help and, you know, he's in a big leadership role. So he did talk to me about how we need to set examples as leaders, but working with our team and how we have to look at everything from every angle before we make a decision and things like that. But definitely not from the accounting perspective. I kind of really relied on my sister a lot for that. She helped me out a ton with kind of her successes and failures in her own businesses and her own practices. So that helped a lot.
Give us some examples of failures.
Let's see. Like,
I'm not talking about yours, not hers. We don't want to air her dirty laundry.
Yeah. in the very beginning, like I didn't have a good bonus structure set up. So I just
But isn't the bonus structure one of the hardest things to do in dentistry?
I think it is. And I thought, hey, I'm doing a great job. I'm going to give a bonus if we meet a certain number. And it's funny how it's the perception comes sometimes can be so different from your team and the way you present it, because I think that maybe sometimes they feel entitled to it, but you get offended that they're feeling entitled to it because it should be a bonus. And then, so I may have like undermined it in the beginning, and it kind of rubbed everybody the wrong way.
Did your previous owner have a bonus system in place?
He did. And I,
you didn't just inherit it and do the same thing?
I didn't do the same because it was so complex. It was just like, oh, if you fill the second column for emergency.
Oh God, help me.
Schedule, then you do 15% of that. And it was so much mind fodder. I didn't need, I just said, okay, let's, if we meet a certain goal every month, then everybody gets this bonus. And, so things like that. And I think that I let's see what else, like, you know, over ordering or under ordering or I kind of set an example, or I kind of set a mandate in my office. I asked everyone on the team, leave your emotional baggage at the door when you walk in the day. Like, I know everybody has stuff going on, but when we're here, we have to be like our best versions of ourselves for our patients stuff. Cause they can see, patients can see through tension and stuff like that with the staff and with all of us. And so, there are days where I didn't reflect that, and I would be cranky about something, and they take it so personally. So little things like that, luckily I had the former owner there with me as associate. So, you know, larger cases and stuff that he had started, I was inheriting those went smoothly.
Okay.
You know, it was a great practice. But
what's it like working with all women? Or I assume you're working with all women.
Yep.
95% of dental employees are women.
Yep. Yep. No, I work with all women, and it's great. I think they, you have to, I don't know, women are either usually very supportive of each other, or they're really like catty and don't like each other.
You haven't had any catty people?
I've had some catty people, but really, I went into this, one of my biggest things, I went into this trying to be as humble as possible and say, I need you guys, and we're going to be in this together. And I think that helped rub them the right way. And that, you know, for the past 4 years, they've been very, very supportive of me. And I don't know, maybe that they didn't have as much luck with the former owner that way. But I mean, everyone gets catty. And I think it was hard for them to see. I'm significantly younger than a lot of them. And maybe, but they've never made me feel like I'm any, you know, I know any less or anything like that. But they've always, they're very respectful. So no, yeah, women can be catty, but they don't show it to me here. Which okay. is great. But I also ask, I say, you know, everyone kind of leave your emotional issues at the door, and let's just do the best dentistry you can. But I also say, come and talk to me. I can't read everybody's minds. If you don't like something or didn't like a bonus or something, come and talk to me about it, because I'm learning as I go too. I think, and if we're really transparent with our team and kind of actually are very humble, it's amazing how accepting they can be of a new owner then. But if you come in thinking, I'm the new dentist, I'm the new owner, I'm the boss,
I know better,
I'm your boss, I write your paycheck. Like, how many times have I heard that from people?
I would never say that to people.
Oh my gosh, I've heard that from other dentists that I was
hell,
like,
they write my paycheck.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing, but you acknowledge that and you're humble, but I hear that. And I said, that's not going to win you any favors with your team. But no, the transition was actually very smooth.
Okay.
Transition with patients was smooth, but the facility was incredibly outdated. And, you know, I like techie, I like gadgety, I like everything. I like things to look pretty, and it didn't feel that way. So when I had new family and friends coming in to see the office, then I was like, yeah, ignore, you know, this 30-year-old chair that.
Ignore 90% of my office.
Ignore 90% of my office. Let me show you my pretty new CEREC that's tucked in the corner. Let me focus you on that. So.
Okay. So I want to talk about two last things. Okay. Well, actually two main, I want to make sure I get through two things, and we can talk as much as you want. I've met somebody who likes to talk more than me, apparently, and you, but that's okay. All right. So, okay. So when you bought this place, it was a bit outdated, zero technology, essentially.
No, they had electronic charting and.
Okay, that is not even technology anymore, okay?
And digital.
Like, what are you going to have, an abacus? Hey, I have a calculator, I have technology.
Let me open my appointment book to schedule.
Hey, I have whiteout instead of an eraser now.
No, but the sensors were updated, but.
Tell me about the practice. I forgot to ask this. You an insurance driven practice? Do you take PPOs? What is your scenario?
We are. I am a premier provider with Delta Dental. That's the only.
So I got into this with Giuliani. Are you a fee-for-service practice?
I'm a fee-for-service practice, yes, but we take insurance. So I know that it doesn't make
but
sense.
But Delta, you're a PPO practice because you take Delta.
Yeah, we Delta's the only one that I take.
But you're contracted, right?
Yes, I'm contracted with okay. Delta.
Because Giuliani tried to tell me that, hey, listen, I'm a fee-for-service practice. I'm like, dude, you take two PPOs, and those PPOs, he's by his own admission, represent 45% of his practice.
Yeah.
Like you have PPO practice. Yeah, so exactly. What Delta represents what percentage of your practice?
Delta represents about 20% of my practice.
So you're 20% PPO. Yes. And I know Delta's Premier, Delta has PPO, but whatever. To me, it's PPO, your contract, your preferred provider. Okay, yes. So you're contracted. And the 80% of your patients pay you your full fee.
Pay me my full fee, exactly.
But you accept assignment?
Yes.
Okay. So if I walk in and I have MetLife, for example, yes. You'll take my 50%.
Yes. So we will take your 50% and we say we will bill it out. And then whatever they come back with covering you, we'll let you know what your difference is at that time.
Let me ask you this. Why wouldn't you just say, like, because in that scenario, my guess is you always have to collect money from people, right?
Yes. And more often than not, especially if they're established especially if they're a new patient, then they will collect up front.
Okay. So what I would like to do is make my insurance percentage instead of 50%, make it 40%, because that typically avoids having to send statements and things.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. So no, you're right. And then it depends. I mean, it depends on one great thing that my team does. They know every member of this community. So if somebody's longstanding, they know, oh yeah, we know that they're going to. Yeah, they're good for it. Or this is a new patient. We're not sure. Let's go and collect, $500 up front for the crown.
How many dentists are in your community?
How many dentists? Not a lot.
Guess. 10?
10.
Okay.
10. We have a lot of specialists in our community.
There's 10 dentists on my street corner.
Yeah. Well, why do you think I bought in Whitefish Bay? I did my research.
Okay. All right. So now we know a little bit about your practice. Now, let's talk about your integration, because how I know of you is through our mutual relationship with Dentsply Sirona. And I knew of you before from the CEREC doctors boards. So obviously you became a CEREC owner.
Yeah,
your practice wasn't already CEREC?
No, my practice wasn't already CEREC. So the first thing that I invested in after, saved up a little bit, the first thing I invested in was a CEREC. And that was driven by talking to my sister a lot. And she's a CEREC doctor. And she said, listen, this is going to be you need ROI right now. So let's, get into a CEREC. This is where it's at. And I mean, I love it.
How'd you get introduced to CEREC besides your sister? What was your buying process?
My buying process is.
Did you go to any events?
I went to, I was flown out by Patterson to ADEC to go design an ADEC office and decided there to buy a CEREC. So it's funny because I have no ADEC chairs now in my new office, but the process started. I was thinking, okay, I'm going to eventually be looking at an office. Let's start looking at some equipment and just meeting with the reps and talking about it. And 90% of my decision was based on seeing my sister and trying it out in her office.
Okay, so you had some validation there from somebody that you trusted.
Yep. And, midwinter, I played around with it and stuff. So got the CEREC in. Yeah, 2.5 years now, implemented it in, hit the ground running with it, went to Scottsdale.
Would you say that it's been a great investment for you?
100%. I love it. It's been a game changer for the way that we practice.
So I hear this all the time, okay? Now, listen, I'm asking this question not because I don't understand it, but for our listeners out there, when people say it's a game changer, what does that mean to you?
It means that it's the way, forget the actual, clinical improvements that it is, but it's the way that we schedule, our patients, the way that everyone in this community knows that, okay, oh, you don't have time, go to Bayshore Dental. You can get your crown done that same day. You don't have to come back. The way we schedule our patients now, and I can, my team up front knows if they're scheduling an hour and a half for a CEREC, then they know at 30 minutes, at 60 minutes, we can put emergencies and things like that. So, and also it's, I'm not seeing temporaries come off and come back and turning over chair time for re-cementing a temp, things like that. All the things that CEREC touts, it's actually one of the few times that the hype is lives up to the name, or the quality lives up to it. So I do probably two a day on average, 2 to 3 a day. So it's a big driving force of my practice here because we do a lot of restorative dentistry here.
What all are you doing with your CEREC machine? What do you use it for?
This is where you're going to probably call me out.
No, but I'm just, no. I mean, okay, maybe.
I'll tell you what I'm using it for, and I'm telling you what I'd like to use it for. I'm just using it for crowns right now.
Crowns, onlays.
Onlays, inlays, three units, bridges, when
indicated. Okay, but hear what you just said, by the way, okay? I'm just using it for crowns. Well, also onlays, inlays, three unit bridges. I mean, that's a lot. And as a CEREC educator, I will tell you that a significant percentage of CEREC owners don't use their machine for beyond crowns and onlays alone. Do you use it for digital impressioning? Do you send cases to Connect?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Because I do them here. I mean,
there's sometimes where you got to send things out anterior single units or.
You're right, and my implant restorations I send out. So
why don't you make those yourself?
Because that's one of the things I want to start doing.
But what's holding you back from doing that?
Well, that's my focus for the past year or two has been building out the new office.
Okay, so that leads us into the new office.
Right. So then, got the.
So what you're saying? I'm sorry to interrupt, but what you're saying is, hey, T-Bone, hold up. I know where you're going, but my focus for the last year has been building this beautiful office, and it's taken all my energy and all my, everything in that. So I'm putting my practice on growth hold from a technology and clinical hold so I can focus on this. Okay.
Right. And not so much growth hold, because to me, building this beautiful, thoughtful, smart, ergonomically friendly, good workflow office that's like, we have some great designers that worked with me in here doing that. To me, that was going to be built in growth right there. I mean, we've gotten so many patients off the street who just walked by and walked in to make an appointment. So that the growth hold wasn't there, but my own skill set I put on hold.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So my skill set I put on hold, and keep in mind, circling back to your whole theme of this is women in dentistry, is that I only have so much time. Mm-hmm. And, brain power in the day that I can dedicate to my new practice, because I still want to be that amazing mother, that amazing daughter, that amazing wife, all that stuff. So I knew that, okay, my focus for 2 years is going to be let's find a location and gut it, remodel it, build this brand new practice, fill it with equipment that I believe in, that I love, that looks good, that's tech driven. And then once that's established, then now.
But what made you do this?
What made me do this? I grew out of my space. I mean, I.
Okay. So the part of it was, it wasn't, I don't want to say ego driven, but it wasn't, hey, I want this, so I'm going to do this. It was also somewhat logically driven.
Yeah, it was logically driven. But, I think men refer to egos, like egos more. I think women in general, we just like to be, we like to, anything associated with us, we like it to look nice. We like to be proud of it. So yeah, I wasn't exactly proud of my current office space, and I wanted to, I have a very, particular taste, and I wanted it to reflect that.
So what made you go crazy, basically?
Well, I'll tell you. So
did you start off wanting to be this crazy?
No, I never. Oh, please. I never started.
And when I say crazy, I'm not saying what you did is crazy. I'm just saying what you did was unique.
It's unique because the stars aligned for me. And I will be the first person to admit that if I get on my high horse telling everybody every dentist should do what I did, it's kind of like Sheryl Sandberg telling every woman you need to lean in. Yeah, it's easy to lean in when you have a team of nannies taking care of your family. And yeah, you can go be, a CEO of a company. I get it. And I don't want to be that person, because for me, my opportunities lined up. I mean, I'm not the primary breadwinner of my family. So I was able to kind of invest all of my earnings into my practice because I know my spouse could take care of the family. That's one. Number two, it's a small community. I put a lot of feelers out there, a lot of support and from the village and stuff helping. We found a property that was basically poorly managed. It was going up for sheriff's auction, almost like a short sale. So I had a lot of family support. We were able to jump on it and invest into it.
And when you say family support, what do you mean by that?
I mean that, you know, the amount of cash you need to have to buy a building at an auction, basically.
So in other words, you got to buy it 100%, I think, at auction.
Buy it 100%.
And then you can refinance it later, but you have to buy it up front. Okay.
You have to come to the closing with the cash in full. And so most of us don't have that right away. And so our parents.
Certainly not 4 or 5 years into practice.
Yeah, exactly. And my parents, my in-laws, and said, everyone said, hey, who wants to, help me invest in this?
Who wants to be an owner of some brick in Milwaukee?
I'll give you a plaque. And so they all, the support was amazing. So I had that. We bought the building and then, of course, back financed it and stuff. But then it was a lemon. It was a junky old building. So put in a significant amount, basically over
more than the building cost.
2.5 times the cost of the building we invested into gutting it. And then when that process started, that's where I went crazy. Basically, I said, why am I going to do like laminate countertops and just do, a regular boring dental office? Because I kind of designed this place like I was building my dream home. And I was lucky in that I got to do that. But also, it took a lot of brain power and efforts. And I'm up at 9.
But it's still a risk. I mean, at the end of the day, no matter how much support you have, no matter how much, hey, my husband can support me, at the end of the day, no wise father, family, husband, or wife is going to say, hey, just go blow it. I mean, we're not that kind of rich, you know?
No, you're absolutely right. We're not, as they say, F you rich. I don't know if you can say that on a podcast.
No, you can say on my podcast, you can say anything you want.
So, no, you're absolutely right. I'm trying to be just mindful that people might be like, oh, yeah.
You want to be thoughtful and wise.
I want to be thoughtful and wise. But yeah, it was a huge risk because of anything. I have to be the driving force of this. So kind of a personality quirk is that Prague and I both, we just love really good architectural design and stuff and fun and looking at fun stuff like that. So like, let's turn this. And it just evolved. This practice evolved into that. And once we selected the equipment, I saw the Teneos at Sarek 30. And
have you seen them before that?
No, I'd never seen that. I told you, I went out to ADEC to pretty much design the office.
Okay.
With Pat, and then I came to Sarek 30 in Vegas, saw the Teneos. I'm like, oh my gosh, these are beautiful. They're beautiful. And, we throw around integrated a lot. And yeah, working with Deb Spicerona, yes, everything's integrated. But do we really, really know what that means? No, it just means like there's not a lot of wires everywhere. It's really, they look really nice. It's seamless. There's a lot of bells and whistles on it. So I was like, yeah, this is like the Tesla of chairs. I want it. Because they look nice and they're really functional. So we kind of designed the whole office around that. I took the Teneo, the pictures of the Teneo to my architects. And I said, let's design something that will do this justice. And that was really the
How'd you get over the sticker shock of those chairs?
Well, maybe I'm completely delusional, but I just kept on thinking, well, it's not like I'm buying all these expensive shoes. I'm like actually investing.
There comes the woman comment. It's not like I'm buying bags.
Going around ROI, I'm like, come on. We have this great $1 million practice that's established in the community. And yeah, we're going to have to pour a few more million into it to really build out the dream. But one, I'm going to be a lot happier. Two, it's going to have growth just because of the new facility.
And the size.
And the size. And you know what? And I guess the reason I wasn't crazy, I didn't freak out at the sticker shock is like, I'm not afraid of hard work. I never intended to say, how can I cut corners and do this? I knew it's going to take 20, 30 years of a long career to justify building this out. But I was up for it. I enjoyed the challenge. So, and Patterson does a great job of kind of sugarcoating that sticker shock, don't they?
They make it a little easy for you. Serona and Patterson both do. Okay. Yeah. So you bought how many Teneos and Tegos? What did you buy?
I bought the XG3D code, the 3D CT.
Okay.
I already had the Sarek. We bought 2 Teneos and 4 Integos. So we equipped
6 chairs.
6 chairs, and we have room for 2 more in the future.
Okay. Okay, wow. All right, so, and then you had mentioned a little bit about getting an associate.
Yeah. So now that Bill Toburin, the former owner, he retired a couple weeks ago. So this summer, July, I have a new associate starting.
What did he think about all of this?
He loved it. I mean, he calls the Teneos robots. He'll say, I push something on the
robot. But I'm talking about the overall design. I mean, because maybe I'd be like, I mean, what I built was so good. Why are you ruining it by making it unbelievably like a Taj Mahal?
Yeah, no, he got it. He knew it was dated, and he said, okay. He's like, wow, I didn't think you'd go this over the top, but he got it. And here's the thing. Majority of dentists, you know, we make a purchase that's based on ROI, right? That's why it's easy to invest in a CEREC or a Galileos, because you see those actual numbers.
So many people don't see that or understand that.
But I think when you wear the private practice or a business owner hat, you make yourself learn that, because you have to be accountable to your accountant every quarter and things like that. But my whole thing was, and I guess the reason why I'm tagged as unique for this, I mean, this is the big reason why, you know, you've invited me on your podcast, or Dentsply Sirona took a big interest in me, and they call me unique. And it's only because I built out this beautiful office that's got, you know, artistic or really fun artwork and really clean lines and upgraded kind of furniture and things like that. But it was like a no-brainer. I said, why isn't an ROI in ourselves good enough? Why do we, you know, I heard a saying a lot. Oh, you know, granite countertops don't pay the bills. Like, invest in things that will increase your growth. So your chairs.
But that's a 1980s mentality.
Exactly. Exactly right. I want to get the word out there that, you know, dentists, if you own your own practice.
I mean, everything can't be about bottom line at the end of the day. Some things have to be about satisfaction too.
Satisfaction. Like I told you, I'm so happy here. Our patients walk in and they're like, wow, that's satisfaction right there. And so we made it look nice, and it reflects my personality.
So there's bubbles everywhere?
Yes, there's bubbles and unicorns and rainbows everywhere. Thank you for saying that. No, but at the end of the day, you know, and I'll use the hotel analogy because I feel like you can relate. But, you know, I tell business people this. You know, if you stay at a Four Seasons or you stay at a Holiday Inn, you're going to see a huge quality difference, right? And
of
you're going to see an amenities difference. And from the furniture to the type of elevator, I mean, everything, the quality, even in wool carpet grains, there's a quality difference. Mm-hmm. You can go commercial cheap just to get the job done, or you can have everything extremely boutique-y. And so, but you're going to pay, the consumer is going to pay the difference in price. You're paying $100 a night versus $500 a night, right? The thing is, in dentistry, we don't get, there's no upcharge for a root canal.
Significant amount.
Yeah. Well, no, not, you're right. Not a significant amount. Remember, I still, you know.
That's $50. I mean, at the end of the day.
Exactly. It's not enough to justify what you did. So, you know, my new office built out could have been done in probably a third of the cost than what we did it. And that was a conscious decision. And it took a lot of me kind of lobbying for that support from family and from my husband and even my team, and kind of justifying every decision to everybody. And you know, in the beginning, during or throughout the build out process, I micromanaged everything and I wanted everything to be perfect. And at the beginning, I would apologize for it. I'm like, I'm sorry. I know. Can you make it like this? And I was like, you know what? Why am I apologizing?
You're paying for it.
This is my life savings. This is not an investment. It's not a drop in the bucket. This is our life savings into something that's going to be a direct reflection of me and our dentistry that we provide. So there's no need to apologize for it. So if we wanted, you know, glass exit signs, I didn't want to apologize for why I wanted it.
If you wanted to be like Neil and have frosted doors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? I mean, I don't have, you know, black gloves everywhere. So yeah. I'm kidding, Neil. I love you. Yeah. But yeah, we wanted to be nice, but then it creeps up. Every little thing adds up. And before we know it, we're like, holy crap.
That's why I'm not allowed to build a house.
Yeah, there you go. Because you're going to want.
Because my wife, when we first built our house, my wife sent me out to pick appliances. And she said, I'll never send you out for anything ever again. Because I just went there and I said, I want that. I mean, I just automatically go to the right, because I said, as you show me, I know the price goes up and I want that.
I want that. And I mean, it's in our nature. We want it good. We want it fast.
Again, I go back to ego, and my ego says I can afford it. Even whether I can or can't, I can afford it.
You can afford it. And I think my ego was probably saying, hey, you know, why not? It's a smart investment. Don't put it in stocks. Don't put it into real estate. Put it into me. And then let's build this practice up and I'll make it worth your while.
So we're going to put a link to a 3D walkthrough of your practice.
Okay. Okay.
So that the listeners can see that. So talk to me about Konebeam. How did you, what made you buy Konebeam?
I was in the market for a new panoramic because our old one was dying. It was 25 years old. So, that, and I said, I knew at the time, I said, I'm not just investing in a 2D. I'm going to buy it, pan. So let me get a
2D. I don't even think 2D digital pans technology anymore.
Yeah, it's not, you're right. It's not. And the only technology is that it, you know, you don't print it.
It's like pocket calculator.
Is it? You're right. But it's amazing how many people still still use those. Yeah. That's your
everyday. No, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with using them. I'm just saying I don't consider that technology.
No, you're right. You're right. And, but having a digital image that you can quickly email to a specialist is considered technology for the majority.
Right.
So, yeah. So I wanted to get a Konebeam so I can start doing more with it. Now, the goal is now that I've built a practice, I've got the time now. Now is the time to start investing back in myself and learning to use that Konebeam for implant placement. I know that, you know, a certain T-Bone harassed and yelled at me at the Milwaukee Summit.
I wouldn't say, I didn't yell at you. I gave you a hard time. I disrupted you.
It's the Indian tough love that you gave
me. Yeah, well, I don't know anything else for anybody. You know, I give people. What did you do with your Konebeam? What was your buying process there? Did you go to any events or did you just blindly trust that the Serono was?
I put a lot of faith into my Patterson equipment specialist, Mike. And cause I kind of met with him and I said, okay, listen, I'm going to put all my trust in you and you're going to help me design this office and pick out the right equipment, but don't screw me over and don't lead me in the wrong direction. So I kind of give that threatening disclaimer from up front.
Did you go to any summits?
I hadn't. No, my first 3D summit was
this past week. Okay. Yeah.
Was my first 3D. So I didn't go to any 3D summits, but I'd gone to Scottsdale to attend some of the CEREC doctors courses, and they referenced Konebeam a lot in there. And I knew it was the right decision to make because that's where dentistry.
You know, I call Serono drug dealers, by the way.
Yeah, they kind of are.
I mean, it's but they make such beautiful stuff, man.
They make gorgeous stuff, and it all matches, and you know, my cabinetry.
I just bought 2 Teneos.
You did? You're going to love it.
I don't get them in. I have to do some modifications to my suites. I'm going to make 2 new suites in the office. I'm going to make them. They're going to be like 15 by 15.
Okay.
So I'm going to make them 2 big suites. And so we got to do some construction before I can. But I'm so excited.
What cabinetry are you doing?
I haven't gone that far yet. I know. I committed to buying the chairs.
Okay. Well. So. I would suggest, you know, that I went through the Kaplan cabinetry through Dentsply Serono.
Yeah, of course. And, I mean, I'll end up putting that in.
It's perfect. But I'll tell you, they were awesome to work with because, you know, they were showing me their options and I kept on saying, and you know, I guess the European way is they don't put any side cabinets in.
No.
Especially not something in the 9 o'clock position, the doctor position. And I said, I kept on saying, listen, I can't not do that. I need something there. And they kept on saying, well, why? What are you going to put on there? And I was like, Kleenex box. I mean, I was very timid in saying that. But then I was like, no, you know what? This is how I practice. This is how we're trained. And so it's amazing. I worked with Holger Kepler and we designed a cute little desk, like, you know, that floats. It's anchored to the wall. And it's Kepler, and he named it. He named it the Mona because he designed it for my office. And now it's kind of a staple for people using their cabinetry in the U.S. for new ops with the Teneos because it's so functional.
I have to ask the Mona. Yeah,
tell him you want the Mona.
All right. So now So what do I have left here? Are you okay on time?
Perfectly fine.
All right. So I keep saying last few things. I'm like notorious. Everything's the last few things. Okay. Okay. So now, timeline. I'm going to get back to the timeline. Okay. 4 years ago, you stopped being an associate. You bought a practice. Okay. You've grown the practice. And about 2 years ago, you made a decision to start looking for a new building and a new everything.
Yep.
And about 5-6 months ago, you moved into this magnificent place.
Thank you.
And what impact has it had on your practice?
Oh, it's euphoric. I mean, just patients.
Great. All the feelings aside, okay. All the women feelings aside. What bottom line impact has it had?
Bottom line impact is we've already had our new patients per month. Mm-hmm. We have had a 50% increase in new patients per month in the past five months, purely off of our new office location.
Location,
social media presence, showing the new office, things like that.
So who's doing that for you, the social media presence?
I have a good friend of mine who he does that for me, but I manage about 80% of it. So I put it out there because it's a fun thing for me. It's not one of those things where I'm micromanaging. It's fun. We make fun videos and stuff, and he'll edit them and guide them, and he'll put them up, but I'll send him some content for it.
Okay.
That's about the extent of the marketing that we're doing, is just putting fun things up on social media.
And okay. All right. That's fair. All right. So let's talk about, so you're doing some speaking as well now. How did you get into that?
Well, you know what? And that's, I think it's fun because women,
I took up half your time down in Orlando, just so you know.
Yeah, you did. And I yelled at you for that because that was my very first public speaking talk as a dentist. And you ate up half my time and I had all my cards and bullet points ready. No,
I didn't even know. I just started talking and nobody, they finally cut the microphone off.
And then I just threw the cards on us. I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm just going up there and talking. Because
See, I helped you out.
You did. And then, it was great. But no, you're such a great dynamic speaker. And it was fun to like watch you and then go up there and say, okay, let me tell you my story. And basically, Dentsply Sirona approached me and they said, you know, you're a unique situation. We built, if not the first, but one of the first all Dentsply Sirona offices in the U.S. because every equipment, all the cabinetry, everything was Dentsply Sirona. So they kind of loved that. And of course, and it was financial investment aside, I was very, I guess, transparent. And I was very, we posted a ton of videos and drone footage and all this fun stuff, all the fun millennial stuff.
Yeah, I saw you. There was like videos of the whole place being built over time lapse.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You make best friends with somebody who's a total geek with a drone. And then you just tell them, I'll buy you some Starbucks.
Did I ever tell you my drone story?
No.
So I was getting filmed for a speaker profile, yep. And the person who came to film me had a drone, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So I went on Amazon and bought one next day air, and it came to my house. My guy said, listen, you need to watch the videos on how to set this thing up. And of course, I didn't read any manuals or watch any videos. I put everything together, turned it on, and in my house, this thing started flying around. So I stuck my hands out there to grab it, and it chopped up my hand.
Oh, my God. Oh, you sound just like another Indian man that I know very well, like my husband who bought a drone on Amazon when he saw it, got it, didn't read it, and flew it outside and crashed the propellers on his very first maiden voyage. So.
Yeah, see, we're all the same.
What is it with you guys and you don't read instructions?
Listen, why should we, when we are the ones that write the instructions and code everything, why in the world should we? That stuff's just innate.
Something there, my friend. You know what? There's girls who code now, so.
No, I'm not talking about guys. I'm just saying Indians in general.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, Indians in general. Yeah, that's true. One of our cousins probably wrote the drone code.
So you're speaking. How much speaking are you doing?
So now, a little bit here and there, not as much. I'm getting more involved into it. I've been working with Dentsply Sirona. And I think for them, maybe they see that I'm a little bit unique and that I'm female. And while I honestly don't love playing the female card on things, it's the reality of it is that, yeah, I'm a female and a mother of two children. And yet I kind of prioritized investing into my practice and wanting to learn. And I think they're excited to kind of have me share that journey with everyday dentists out there. 52% of dentists out there are females now, but yet how many
graduating,
how many female speakers or CE leaders in their community or, you know,
no, not 52%.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all these amazing blogs that I follow and websites, you know, Digital Enamel, yours, Sam Corey's, all these, they're amazing, but you don't see a lot of females in that giving their perspective on it. So I think that maybe that's a unique niche where I can bring in some perspective. I'm a very what you see is what you get person. And, I can share some of my successes and, you know, in my own private office, in my office, I have a whole little area for the kids that I built that they can do their homework and play their Legos. There's literally a whole pile of Legos on the floor of my office right now.
I went to Legoland last week.
Yeah, I saw that. It's pretty cool. In your orange hat. It was awesome.
So let me ask you this. So what is your goal with the speaking? Do you want to speak every week? Do you want to speak once a month? What is your vision for that?
Well, again, I mean, I'm very cognizant of work-life balance. So I don't have a definitive number, but maybe, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a year, speaking and kind of just being relatable to people that aren't as, I'll tell
three,
you.
3, 4, 5 times a year? That's hardly at all.
I think that's
like a month.
That's a month, you know, yeah, maybe every couple months.
Okay.
Hey, I could maybe start a podcast like yours.
And you should. You talk a lot. You could.
Yeah. But you know what? And this is coming from someone who's attended, you know, watched you speak a few times, things like that. You and a lot of the powerhouse speakers out there are amazing, dynamic personalities. And you guys are incredibly inspiring because you share your own stories and how you've implemented so much growth in your practice, you know, with you, with the sleep and things like that. But
how much did that pay into your role of buying all this stuff?
Well, first of all, it's very intimidating because I guess I don't know if it's because I'm female or if it's because I'm a little bit a few years younger or who knows, but I get very intimidated about doing all of that. So I'm hoping that me kind of sharing some of my stories about the decision making I'm doing maybe can relate to the quote unquote more everyday dentist. And I know that you guys are trying to do that too. And in some ways
Yeah, but at some point we lose touch with reality a little bit.
You do a little
bit. The perception is that we're not like, how about this? I take way more insurances than you do.
Yeah.
Right. You know, my practice is probably truthfully more every day than yours in the sense that I would say 80% of my practice is PPOs and 20% isn't. But the perception or the perception is that we have these practices that are different and they're not. But
yeah, they're not. I mean, and it's the work-life balance. I would love to dedicate 10 hours a week to my own personal time to CE, whether it's just sitting down and reading or like implementing better manuals. I was listening to you and Mina Barsoon talking about, he's got some pretty good regimented manuals or protocols in his office. And you're like, take a half a day off to implement a new home sleep study manual into your office. I mean, yeah, I would love to do that kind of stuff. But the reality is I'm burning the candle at both ends. And so you don't dedicate that time. And I think that that's what your everyday dentist is. Not so much that I'm a PPO office, but it's more like, I have 2 kids and I'm, you know,
they're not 100% committed like somebody like me is.
Yes.
Like I live, eat and breathe this stuff.
Yes. And my husband lives, eats and breathes his career. And so, and there's no shame in that. That makes you guys amazing clinicians and amazing business people. But I don't have the luxury, or right now I don't have it yet. You know, you always say we want more time, money, or satisfaction, right? I'm incredibly satisfied at this moment because I'm still riding this high from this new office, but that's going to wear off soon and I'm going to want to implement.
A year from now, that'll wear off.
Yeah, implants, sleep apnea, and all that. And I can do that slowly. And the money, the money is always, yeah, everyone wants more money. But really, for me, it's the time. I just want to be able to. And maybe this is a female thing, but, you know, we want to be the Pinterest mom. We want to be able to send the right homemade treats with our kids to school and not just buy a box of brownies on our way home from a podcast at 9 o'clock at night, you know, which is what I'm going to be doing tonight because she needs to take treats tomorrow.
Your husband bake something.
Yeah, sure.
The house will be on fire.
He probably lined up a bunch of protein bars and said, here you go. But, you know, it's that mom guilt. And I'm sure that I know that there's people out there, probably the dad guilt. But if I dedicate the more hours I'm dedicating to and having my own growth in my practice, as far as starting to place implants and educating myself and training to do that, or integrating home sleep studies and doing sleep apnea, then that's less time that I am with my other responsibilities. And that's the personal choice that I make. So there's a.
But I think getting your associate will help you with that.
Absolutely. That's a huge driving force. I want him to come in and basically do the run of the mill. And it's exactly what you talk about. And it's very inspiring. I want him to be able to eat up what eats up my day, which a lot of restorative.
I don't think you should be doing fillings and crowns anymore.
I would absolutely love to be able to, a year from now, us talk and say, yeah, he does all the fillings and crowns and I'm able to focus on
whatever it is you want to focus on.
Whatever it is, the implant or the sleep or the TMJ.
I see a second associate in the future. We're trying to hire a second associate right now.
That's awesome. Good for you. That's amazing. I mean, we're hiring a new associate and a new hygienist. And
how's that search going for the associate?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's done.
You already found somebody.
I found someone and he's starting in July. And to Patterson Dental's credit, I have a great relationship with my local Patterson team here, and they vetted him. And they said for over 6 months now, we have the perfect person for your office. We know you now. We know your philosophy. We know what you want to do. And so they really helped me search. But it's he's a fresh graduate, and a lot of people are kind of saying, well, that's a little risky, don't you think? But, you know, I'm up for the challenge.
You were a fresh graduate once.
Exactly. We all needed a job once, and I'm up for taking him under our wing here and saying, hey, this is kind of how we do. Our practice is, I mean, maybe not unique, but it's one of those, it's boutique-ier in that our patients, we spend so much time chatting with them. I can't go to the grocery store down the street without bumping into five patients and spend half an hour there talking. So it's a very community-based, small town, everyone helps each other out kind of thing, and I love that. But it also comes with this higher expectation that we know everything about them, and we'll drop everything to take care of them and things like that. And that's perfectly fine with me. I like that mentality. So I need to kind of season my new associate to get into that mentality. But it'd be great if he can take on some of the run-of-the-mill dentistry, the restorative and the crowns, and I can focus on some of...
Just set the expectations up front. That would be my number one advice to you on that with associates. I've struggled. I finally got a great one right now. I mean, I told him today that I felt blessed, and I'm not a religious person, that he's in my life, and he's really allowed me to do some different things, which is great.
I mean, you look at you. I think people take it probably for granted that you have this dental practice that you can come in and get a two surface resin done, you know, because we think of T-bone and you're doing all this education and sleep and implants and all this stuff, and you're able to do that because you do have this great team and associate that can do that, and you have a very supporting Mona at home.
Yes.
With that, so
yeah,
I'm hoping with, you know, speaking a little bit more and getting out there, one, I get to show off my beautiful office. We're really proud of it,
and you should be. I mean, it's fantastic.
But I want people to know that it's not just, oh, pretty colors and cool furniture. It's a lot of thought into the flow. And, you know, my sterilization is completely in the open in the middle of the office, and because I wanted that transparency for patients to see that. And a lot of kind of the decisions why we chose what we did. And in that it's, you know, I guess my takeaway message would be that in building out an office and spending double your budget on your own office, yes, you have to be in a fortunate place to do that. To be able to do that or have to convince a bank to finance that. But it shouldn't be, you should still understand there's an ROI there. There is an ROI because you're personally so fulfilled and your patients are going to see that. And why not create an environment that reflects who you are? I mean, it's amazing how...
I mean, it's worked out financially for you, even beyond the fact that you were in a position to get some help with it. It turns out that you didn't need the help.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. You're right. And it's, we could have financed it 100%, but it's worked out. It's a long-term payoff plan, which I'm prepared for that. But why not be proud of what we want to be proud of what reflects our home. My dental practice is my second home. And
maybe a primary home tonight.
There are times, maybe tonight. After I go pick up the brownies, I'll just come back here.
You can do drive-through. I think Taco Bell sells Choco Tacos.
Gosh, you know what? Hey, I told you, I at least once a day text my husband, hashtag mom of the year, because there's something I've forgotten, or, you know, I didn't make it to right on time, or showed up to in scrubs, or things like that. But you know what? I mean, we're trying to teach our girls, hey, you have two working parents, we're working hard, we're following our dream, and as cheesy as that is, it's important. And
how do people get in touch with you, Mona?
Easily. They can get in touch with me to my email. You can email me at monapateldds@gmail.com. You can get in touch with me on Facebook, Mona Goyal Patel, or at Bayshore Dental. Our office is Bayshore Dental in Whitefish Bay, and the office phone number is 414-332-6010. But this day and age, just go to our website, Bayshore.
Do you allow people to come in that and look at your office and see what you've built and how you've designed it?
All the time. At least once a day, somebody's walking through this office. So my team doesn't always love this, but I tell them this office is always on its A game and show ready. And that's just my own mentality. That's how I like to keep things, like everything in its place and a place for everything. So we have people coming in all the time. I mean, I'm incredibly proud of this office, and without sounding egotistical, I mean, a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of nights up late on my laptop looking at Pinterest, and a lot of creativity went into this office. Like our artwork, some of our artwork on the walls, I have these fingerprints of my daughters, these huge CAD CAM stylized fingerprints, and they're, and it's like,
is that what that is behind you? I thought those were eyeballs.
Look, no, these are two, they're two fingerprints
of your daughter,
of my two, of each daughter.
Oh, that's awesome.
Started with a joke when we were talking about the, how the white walls, I said, well, my daughters are going to fingerprint everything up anyway. And so they took three layers of black, gray, and white plywood, combined it together, CAD CAM stylized, milled it onto this. And it's a kind of a, like a homage to dentistry of the materials that we use. So it's pretty cool. We're proud of those stories. So I'd love to show it off and tell people not to be egotistical about it, but to be, maybe to inspire somebody. You know, I'm not quite at the place where, you know, when we hear you speak, you inspire us to like say, hey, implement sleep apnea evaluation into your office and things like that. You know, those are not my niches yet, but my niches are smart office design and ergonomic office design, and kind of put a little bit of your personality in your office, and you'll be surprised what that ROI is. And it's not a tangible ROI, but there's nothing wrong with it being a emotional ROI.
Well, it's part of that satisfaction. Mona, I feel bad. I've kept you very, very late.
You're fine. I dedicated my evening to you, Timo.
Oh, but see, now if I can get another Mona to dedicate her evening to me, that would be nice.
You know what? Hey, Indian women are usually nice to every single Indian man except their own husband.
Pretty well, I can vouch for that.
Thank you for including me in here. And, you know, I'd love for people to come and chat with me anytime, or if they want to show me their office plans and pick my brain on stuff. I've made a lot of mistakes, and, you know, I wish certain things with HVAC plans or acoustics or things like that, I wish I could go back and change. So I'm happy to talk to people out there about office design or just women in dentistry, and kind of getting the word out there that women need to be more in more leadership roles, actually.
That's awesome. So again, thank you very much for listening, everybody. I want you to take an opportunity to meet Dr. Patel, Dr. Mona, and she is fantastic. She has an unbelievably bright future within our profession, and I think she represents a good way of moving forward. Despite that we're both Sirona fan people, I think it's beyond that. I think, you know, substitute whatever XYZ brand that you want to use in this, whether it, you know, whatever brand you want to use. It's about building, having a passion, building, chasing a dream, designing what makes you happy, and making wise and logical decisions along the way. And I would say, to me, the biggest thing that I've heard here from me is location, location, location. It makes a big difference to be in the right spot. So again, if you guys could do me a couple of favors, if you could leave us some reviews on iTunes and share these episodes with other practitioners, that would be unbelievably wonderful. Until next week, see you then.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.